You're gonna have to leave Batman alone. Period. The slander has to stop.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me as always on Twitter at redrock_Beeble. We're going to cover a big Monday. There are 10 games on in the NBA. We're going to preview a smaller Tuesday where we've got a 6-game slate. We're going to shine that player spotlight to a young guard in New York, and that is Trey Burke. That's all coming up in today's show. So, Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed. We will start with the monstrous line of the night. I might as well just rename this the Anthony Davis Memorial Monstrous Line of the Night, because he gets it again. He has been as insane as we have ever seen anybody, I think, over this, over a short period of time in fantasy basketball. Maybe you go back to some of the Jordan days, but this sort of play from Anthony Davis is absolutely out of control. Against the Phoenix Suns, Davis had 53 points with 18 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, 5 blocks, 16 of 29 from the field, and 21 of 26 from the free throw line. He is inching closer towards Jim Harden as the number one ranked player for the season. He's number 2 overall at the moment. Over the last 2 months, he's the number one guy. Over the last month, he's the number one guy. And of course, over this insane stretch over the last 2 weeks, where in these last 4 games, he is averaging 42-16. Averaging 42-16 with 2.8 steals and 3.5 blocks, this whole thing is absolutely ridiculous anyway, so no wonder I can't get my words right. Hitting 56% of his shots and 85% of his free throws on 13 attempts. This sort of production is as out of control as it gets. And he's only shooting 25% from three, so imagine that he was hitting those at the same rate that he was over the course of the season, where he's at 35%. He'd be averaging another couple of points extra per game, and the value would be through the roof. There is no one even close to him over these last couple of weeks, and even over the last month. His numbers are out of control as long as he stays healthy. And he has played 54 games. He's on track for another mid-70s in terms of games played this season, much like he played 75 games last season. It's something that gets reported on quite a bit. But so far this season, he has missed, I'm just going to count them up here, he has missed 6 games. So he's only missed 6 games this season. And I know, yes, sometimes he leaves games early. That's only happened maybe twice or 3 times this season. But overall, he is still playing an extraordinary amount of minutes and producing at an absolutely ridiculous level for your fantasy basketball team. A couple of years ago, you could have got Davis at significant discounts. I got him at 9 in a dynasty draft. I was pretty happy with that. He's still available at discounts in lots of different scenarios. I get the feeling that if he finishes this season with 75 games played again and is the number 2 or number 1 guy, he is not getting out of that top 3 next season. Although some people will be scared off if DeMarcus Cousins returns and how's that going to affect Davis, but he's ludicrous. He is putting up, and he is young. He has got, he can still get better, which is crazy. These numbers at the moment, just absolutely enjoy them, because they don't come along often. They just never come along. These sort of performances don't ever happen, and you are getting them consistently from Tone Davis. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Jonathan Simmons of the Orlando Magic. 19 points for Simmons on only 7 shots, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, 4 steals and a block. He was 5 of 7 from the field and 9 of 10 from the free throw line. You'll be well aware I've been quite critical of Simmons as a player and as a fantasy basketball asset this season, and for good reason. He is only the 147th ranked player for the year. Recently, his numbers have been a bit improved. Over the last month, he is a top 100 guy. But in large part, and I say this about him all the time, is that when his value is good, it's because he's shooting at a really high rate. And over those last 13 games, he's a 49% shooter. He's 47 for the season. He was 52 last season. So it's an elevation in his field goal percentage. He doesn't get you high assist numbers normally. He doesn't get you high steal numbers. Had 4 today, but he's still averaging 0.8 on the season. Doesn't block shots. Not a high rebounder. Doesn't hit lots of threes. He is a perfectly fine 14-team roto guy. if you had him in a 12-team roto situation, he's probably one of your three worst players. Now, the fact that Terrence Ross has had a setback and he's going to be out for longer periods of time, Simmons does have marginal appeal. But look at this game. This is great. The game before, he went 9-4-4 on 4 of 12 shots, and that's what he does. The good games look great. They look sexy. He throws down dunks. He has athletic chase-down blocks, and people get really, really rigid thinking about John Simmons. Look at this. It's excellent. But then you see the shit ones in between, and people, they don't pay massive amounts of attention to those. And when I call out players or theories, it's not that I'm saying that things don't happen. Like, he has good games. He had a 34-point game at the start of February against Cleveland. It's more that a lot of the time we focus on these things that do happen that confirm our opinions, and the things that don't happen, or when it doesn't happen or goes against it, we ignore it. It's like with contract years. It's like with revenge games. It's all well and good when it happens, but when it goes the opposite way, it gets sort of removed from our minds, and we've got to put the whole picture in there. Otherwise, you get swayed by, I remember when Jonathan Simmons hit 4 threes in the opening night against Golden State, which is what he did last season. And then I think he went about 7 weeks without hitting a single three-pointer after that. But remember, oh, he can be a three-point threat. Or he had a fluke-ass game, and it was burnt into our brain. Again, he can have some value, he can be used, but his value comes when he shoots at a much higher rate than what he usually does, and that's something that's not always going to be there, so he's going to be a touch-and-go sort of a player, and I'm not a massive fan of him long-term. He's going to be turning 29 in the next few months. The young gun of the night, Lonzo Ball, 13-7-5 for Lonzo, 3 triples, 3 steals. He just marginally got the nod over his teammate Brandon Ingram as the young gun of the night, mainly because he didn't miss a single shot. 3 of 3 from 3, 4 of 4 from the field, hit both of his free throws, and that really boosted his numbers up. I tweeted this out today that I think that Lonzo Ball is going to be a top 30 player next season. Maybe that's being cautious, because over the last 3 months, he is the 28th ranked player, and that is while shooting 58% from the line and 43% from the field. Over the year, he's only at 36% from the field, but we've seen his numbers start to improve. In fact, over those last 18 games, most of those before the injury, obviously, he is shooting 39% from three, more in line with what he did at UCLA, where he was a very good three-point shooter, and is at 43% from the field. And if he can maintain 43 from the field, get himself up to 67, 70% from the line, he's got a real chance at being a top 20 guy next season. So for all that, the hate that this guy got for his poor shooting, which was, it was bad. He was a bad shooter at the start of the season. We know that. But for fantasy, he just racks up numbers in multiple different categories. In his first 2 games back from the knee injury, he has had 3 threes in each of the games, 7 rebounds in each of the games, and 11 assists combined across both of the games. Yeah, that is significant production. Today's game, he got 3 steals. The game before, he didn't get any, and he hasn't had a block, which is something he normally does as well. He is an elite fantasy asset in the making, a guy that could really peak in terms of fantasy value, not necessarily on court value, but peak ahead of Donovan Mitchell, ahead of Ben Simmons, just for their fantasy value. If he ever gets any sort of semblance of usage and scoring, he could push himself into the top 12 discussion, and that's sort of where Mitchell's ceiling is and Simmons is there. But these three guys are going to be floating around this top 20, top 25 over the next 2 seasons with the ability to push higher. Massive fan of what Lonzo, and I said this in preseason, I was skeptical a little bit of Lonzo. I thought he had quite a big bust potential heading into the league. I wasn't so sure about it, but I said if he can play and stay on the court, then his fantasy value is going to be through the roof. It was probably going to be the highest out of all of the rookies coming in this draft anyway. And we've seen Mitchell go ahead of him, but he does have that ability to contribute in multiple categories. High rebounds, high assists, high steals, high blocks, hit threes. And if he gets the percentages to just an average level, and that brings his scoring up to 13 or 14 points per game instead of 10, then it's a top 20 guy fairly comfortably. Think a guy like Draymond Green. That's the sort of value that Lonzo can have on an ongoing basis. So shout out to Lonzo. The dart of the night. Oh, Jesus. Blake Griffin has been atrocious recently. 12-1-5. 1 rebound. Andrew Wiggins went out in sympathy with Blake today. He ended up with 1 rebound as well, but that is a horrible performance from Griffin. He had the 0-0, no threes, no steals, no blocks, 4 of 12 from the field and 4 of 6 from the line. He has not been good over the last 4 games. The one before the break and the three after it. 34 minutes, but only 15 and a half points, five rebounds, under five assists, no steals, not a single steal in that time, and only one block in that time. One block in that time, also shooting 39% from the field, 71% from the line. His numbers, his field goal percentage, he was a 49% shooter last year, 50 the year before, 50 the year before, 53 the year before. This season, 43%. And if your rebounds are coming down, which they are again, he's only at 7.6 this season, and your field goal percentage is coming down as well, your value is pretty rapidly falling. This trade could be an absolute disaster for the Pistons. I know they got themselves a star, but when your star's not that good and he is declining, and we're seeing that at the moment with Griffin, and I know a lot of Pistons fans are fairly bleak in their outlook anyway, I don't think they're going to be too happy with the way things are running with him and Stan Van Gundy, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But not good stuff here from Blake. He is outside the top 190 over those last four games. In the last month, he is outside the top 70, and it's a realistic assumption to think that perhaps he could be outside the top 50 from now until the end of the season. Maybe he gets it together. Maybe he turns that field goal percentage around and starts grabbing at least some rebounds. But at the moment, it is a significant struggle for Blake and for the Detroit Pistons. The Pistons, yeah, they are getting their pants pulled down at the moment. Not ideal for Pistons fans, clearly. All right, let's get into these games and take a look at the detail across Monday's action. The first game we'll look at is those Pistons and the Raptors. Just an absolute caning. This is just something that Raptors do to pretty much every team. I spoke with Sean Woodley on Locked On NBA yesterday talking about the Raptors' success and their bench units, and they did it again here. Andre Drummond was fine, 18-18 with four steals and three blocks. That's a huge line from him, but otherwise it's a wasteland of fantasy. Reggie Bullock had 14 points in 32 minutes with a couple of threes. His efficiency looks like it's here to stay. I don't believe he is a must-own 12-team league guy. Stan Johnson is not anywhere near a 12-team league player. Only 24 minutes here. He had 2-2-2, while Jim Ennis played more minutes and had 10-6. Ennis has significantly cut into Johnson's playing time, and that's the way it's going to remain. Stan Van Gundy said pre-game that he had to make a decision between Luke Kennard and Langston Galloway and stick with it. Kennard was the guy in the rotation, so it looks like he's going to be in the rotation for at least the foreseeable future. He had 0 points on four shots in 16 minutes, and not really doing much to your fantasy value there, while Jameer Nelson out of the rotation because he should never have been in because he's bad and he is not a good player anymore. Dwight Bikes took that spot back. He had 12 points on 11 shots. It's not like he was all that successful. Four rebounds and four assists for Bikes, but the fact that he's back in the rotation now gives you something to look at in those deeper leagues. Tone Tolliver struggled. Ish Smith had 16 in 26 minutes. For the Raptors, just another smashing. So they didn't have to play big minutes to their stars. 25 minutes for Lowry, 29 for DeRozan, 24 to Ibaka, and all three of those almost got to 20 points with Ibaka just at 19. Strong performances all round for them. But Pascal Siakam, he of the 14% three-point shooting, missed another three here. Sorry, 19%, don't want to shortchange him. 11, 5, and 6 with two blocks. He just has these random games of outbursty type production. And you go, shit, what does this mean? I'm not sure he's ever going to be an awesome fantasy guy. It's still a couple of years away, even if he becomes a full-term starter when Ibaka starts to wind down. But some interesting stuff from him. Valanciunas struggled a bit, 2-5. Well, Jakob Poeltl stepped up, man. Poeltl's going to be good. He's going to be really good, I think. He's only in his second year. I think we see big things from Poeltl, at least, if not next year, the year after. And I think that he can have multiple top 60 fantasy seasons. He had 8-4 with three steals and a block in this one. Not really worth looking at outside of streaming in standard leagues at this point. Freddie VanVleet had 8, as did DeLon Wright, and both had contributions in other areas. While the Jedi...
Hello there.
He keeps starting, but he's not doing much. OG Anunoby, 8 points with two assists. I think he is a really significant dynasty piece who's got top 100, top 80 type potential, but clearly not showing that at the moment. But he does have some value as we move forward in his career. The next game we look at, the Chicago Bulls and the Brooklyn Nets. There was no Zach LaVine. So, of course, the man that you've taken out of the rotation, Justin Holiday, you start him. And not only do you start him, but you play him 35 minutes. He is... And look, I've softened a little bit on my criticisms of Fred Hoiberg this season. I thought he's made some decent coaching moves. But this is bullshit. Why, if you're running with the youngsters, if LaVine's out, why are you putting Holiday back in there? Why is he playing 35 minutes? just give, play him 26. That's fine. Bring Antonio Blakeney in, see what he can do. Run some of these other guys there. Run more Denzel Valentine. The Hammer played 30 minutes and had 11 and 13 with three triples. I know he took 16 shots, but give him those minutes. Justin Holliday is one of the more frustrating players to watch, and some of it I blame on Hoiberg. One of his biggest misfires this season is telling Holliday at the start of the year, he has got the green light, he can shoot from everywhere. This is not who this guy is as a player. And he's out there, he passes it to Larry Markin, and then he runs off screaming, waving his hands, clapping, and then cracks the shits when the ball doesn't get back to him. Mate, you are not good. You are not a good player. I don't know why you should be demanding the ball every time and think that every shot needs to go to you. He shot 1 of 11 from the field in this game, but that sort of, he is just frustrating to watch. He's up there with Fart and Will Barton in terms of, I cannot watch this guy play. It is just a complete frustration level, just goes through the roof. Just demanding shots off players. Like, just calm your tits, mate, and know where your role is. And the coach needs to be doing that as well. Larry Markkanen bounced back after a couple of poor games, 19 and 16, while David Nwaba, he did some stuff. 31 minutes, 6 and 6 with 2 assists and 2 steals. But this sort of line, I feel, is more representative of what Nwaba can do rather than those 19-point or 21-point performances that he was having on those high-volume, high-efficiency sort of nights. But he does have some sneaky value. Chrissy Dunn was good, 23, 3 and 4, 2 steals and 2 blocks. Just super athletic, great shot-blocking point guard. Well, Chris Felizio, man, he is a clumsy doofus, is the best way of describing him on the court. He jumps over the top and smacks his teammates in the head to get rebounds. He falls over people. He is just out of control on the court. Campaign, it was not a good night for Maya. I think Campaign can still be good. Take 2 points on 1 of 10 shooting, while PunchBob Shiploke had 12 and 9 in 21 minutes. That's 2 games in a row where Portis's minutes have been way down. Still think he needs to be owned, but if he's playing 21 minutes instead of 28 minutes, that sort of analysis could change. On to the Nets, Jarrett Allen. Yeah, let's go. 23 minutes for Allen. 18 and 9, 3 blocks, 73% from the field. Yeah, there was that weird stretch where he started starting and they played him 17 minutes a night, but hopefully that's over. He needs to be owned in all leagues. Quincy Acey basically out of the rotation, only 9 minutes here, while Dante Cunningham got the backup playing time there, 5 and 9 with a steal and 2 blocks. It's indicative of how they want to run things that Allen still played 23 minutes, and it's not a huge amount, but he got 23 even with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson back. Rondae played 22 off the bench and had 7 and 4 with a steal and a block. Now, this is something I mention all the time, but obviously not everyone that follows me on Twitter listens to this podcast, because I get the question at least, I reckon, twice or three times a week. Is the question will always come in, who do I drop to activate Hollis-Jefferson? And I got that question yesterday. And the answer is you don't. Unless we're talking about a top upper echelon player, it's a guy like Kevin Love who's coming off a broken hand, maybe not even him, maybe it's Anthony Davis coming off a broken hand, or it's Chris Paul, or it's Paul George, anyone who's outside that top 30, and even if they're inside that top 30 or top 20 and they're coming off a lower leg injury, you don't activate him the first game. Especially a guy like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, you keep him in IR, you wait for a couple of games there, and you see what happens. Does he get re-injured? Are they going to run his minutes in really slowly? In that time, one of your other players might get injury reserve designation, and then it's a quick swap, and you drop nobody. Getting the questions about Paul Millsap. Oh, Millsap's questionable tomorrow. Who do I drop? You drop absolutely no one. You don't activate Millsap, who's been out for almost 3 months with a wrist injury. We don't know, A, if he's even going to play. And in that time, look, he can play tomorrow. That's fine. And then you've got another couple of days to see what happens. Maybe, unfortunately, someone else gets injured, roles change, things change, and then a decision becomes clearer. But unless it's an upper echelon guy, leave their ass in the injured reserve spot and wait it out for a day or two. I've got Marcus Smart in one of my injured spots still in one leg now. Probably should look to activate him, but I don't need him just at this point. And then I'll make that decision of who needs to switch in. But I'm not preemptively getting guys like Hollis-Jefferson out of IR just because they're coming back. And we see why. Like, getting 7 and 4 in 22 minutes, and that's not worth dropping someone who could have been useful for you. Caris LeVert was also back, 6 points, 4 assists and 2 blocks. He's just not going to have enough playing time to be valuable. Interestingly, the Blue Swimmer played only 23 minutes. He was the guard that was hurt the most by the return of LeVert. We still had D'Angelo Russell played 29 minutes, Spencer Dinwiddie played 29 minutes. Both those guys were horrible with shooting, but added 8 assists to Russell and 9 to Dinwiddie. And Jumpin' Joe Harris still played 30 minutes and had 15 and 7. So there's going to be ups and downs there with those guys. Crabb was strong, 21 with 4 triples, not much else, as is his knack. But let's see how that all plays out with LeVert back in there now. How will those minutes go? And when Rondé actually goes back into the starting lineup, who moves out? Is it Damari Carroll, who had 18, 6 and 5? Is it Russell? Is it Crabb? How are they going to run things? My guess would be Carroll, and he'd move to the bench. And if he starts playing 24 minutes a night, then it's going to be tough work holding on to him, but it is going to be an interesting scenario to see how that all pans out in Brooklyn. The Memphis Grizzlies and the Boston Celtics. Marc Gasol was back, 17, 8 and 8, and a triple one. Absolutely fantastic if you own him. There are going to be some rest days, there are going to be some lowered minutes, but it's not going to be him playing 16 minutes a night like Courtney Lee in New York. He's not going to be shut down and not play again this season, I don't believe. So look, you're going to get some good performances. Jermichael Green also was really strong here. He and Jarrell Martin, they get extra minutes when Wayne Seldon and Chandler Parsons are out, because they play either Green or Martin at the three, and they both give them 30 minutes. But when Seldon's back and we're pushing Dylan Brooks up to the three, and when Tyreek's back and pushing Andy Harrison over to the two as well, then Martin and Green are going to share more of those minutes at power forward, and they won't be getting 34 minutes apiece as they got in this game. 21 and 11 for Jermichael was great. He just does nothing in steals, nothing in blocks. He's never that good of a scorer usually. I really don't rate him as a must-own 12-team league guy, and I think when Evans, Seldon, Parsons comes back, he's going to be at 26 minutes instead of 34 minutes, and then with the lack of everything else that he does, the value is just not going to be there. Deontay Davis did what he does in limited minutes, 12 points in 13 minutes there. Well, Brooksy had 6, 2, and 2. He just is a poor, poor fantasy option. Andy Harrison, just shit on your percentages, but had 14, 7, and 7, so some decent numbers there for him. On to the Celtics. Bainsey was back, but it was Vanilla Tice that got the bulk of those minutes at center. 12 and 7 for Daniel Tice, a steal and a block, while Bainsey had 9 and 2. Greg Monroe.
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
He was a DNP CD. Brad Stevens said he did want to get him in, but couldn't find a way with Tice playing so well. He's not going to be a DNP every night, but it should be pretty clear that you don't want Munro in 12s, and you probably don't want him in 14-team leagues. Terry Rozier got super hot, 17 points and only 9 shots, but the 19 minutes is more indicative rather than the 17 points, so consider him not a 12-teamer. Marcus Smart had 6-1 and 5 with 3 steals, and Marcus Morris, highest minutes on the team for Morris, 13 and 8 in 34 minutes, leave him for the 14-teamers. Jason Tatum, shout out to Jalen Rose. He is not a 47% three-point shooter. Who knew, apart from everybody? 5 points, 3 rebounds, 2 of 8 shooting. He is, over the last couple of months, outside the top 150. Getting into the playoffs, you can say how good he is. I know he's only 19. But he might be he's a drop guy. He is not an auto drop guy. There are very often, or very few times, if someone is an auto drop where you just drop him for no reason, unless a guy's injured. But if there's someone you want to add, then what we're seeing from Tatum, the minutes really starting to come down, the efficiency really starting to drop off. He just isn't doing it. He's just not producing the numbers. And you're in the playoffs. I don't give a shit what someone did in November or December. If they're not doing it in March, then you can piss him off. And I don't think you're losing a huge amount there. I don't expect him to suddenly come out and start shooting 50% from three again. Jaylen Brown, you're getting close to a similar situation, to be honest. I'd rather Brown over Tatum at this point, though. 13, 4, and 3 for Brownie in his 26 minutes. Let's go on to the next game, the Golden State Warriors and the New York Knickerbockers. Durant had 22, Klay Thompson had 26, and Steph had 21. Just really more of the same from this team. 10, 3, and 6 for Draymond with a steal and 2 blocks. But we did get the return of Jordan Bell. 13 minutes for Bell, 3 points, 3 assists, and a block. Again, just really tantalizing us. I saw someone comment somewhere that if Bell gets 25 minutes a night, he's going to be this great option in fantasy playoffs. I think there's almost zero chance that he plays 20. It's got to be as close to zero as anything plays 25 minutes a night. Yes, he did play some backup power forward minutes in this game. Kevon Looney was out of the rotation, but David West, JaVale McGee, Zaza Pachulia are all still in the mix there at center. So, you know, 16 to 17, 18 minutes is a more realistic expectation for Bell, and that puts him in that 14 to 16 team category. You give him 26 minutes a night, then he's knocking on the top 60, top 70 door. I just don't think that's going to come for him this season. On to the Knicks. We'll talk about Trey Burke later, but he had a nice game again. 18 points with 5 assists and a triple one on efficient shooting, which is never going to continue. Manny Moutier, really good game from Moutier. Had not hit a single three as a member of the Knicks, but knocked in 3 here, I believe all of them in the first quarter. 20 points with 7 assists, 2 steals and a block. If I had to choose between Moutier and Burke to add to my team, I'd pick Mudiay, assuming I can deal with the poor field goal percentage, but he'd be the guy that I look towards, played more minutes than Burke here again. Timmy Hardaway, 14-1-4. Courtney Lee, done. 11 minutes. Get rid of him. That's three games in a row under 20. Not a 12-teamer, not a 14-teamer. Mick Beasley, getting pretty bloody close. Had to leave the game due to a laceration, but still just 26 minutes. Hasn't got over 30 in the past three. 2-4-4. He and Ennis Kanter and Courtney Lee are seeing their minutes reduced. Kanter only played 17 minutes, but to be fair to Ennis, this was a shit matchup. It's the Warriors. He could easily play 25 minutes in the next game and still have value. So I'd rather, yeah, in terms of prioritizing those three guys who to drop, it's Courtney Lee, then there's a big chasm, and then it's Beasley, and then it's Kanter. But definitely be monitoring the Beasley and Kanter situation. Nilakina had 13-5, a good night from him, but he's still more of that deeper league guy, while Big Cock had 14-6 in 21 minutes. I think Cock's ceiling is definitely limited, but he can be a solid playoff contributor for head-to-head leagues. Just get the guy in there, get his 21 minutes, and have, you know, close to top 100, top 120 value in that playing time. The Lakers and the Hawks, I talked about Brandon Ingram a little bit earlier. He has been really, really superb lately. 21-10-6 for Ingram as the starting point guard. One steal, three blocks, but it's his efficiency. He was at 63% in this game, and one of the things about him as one of legitimately the worst players in the NBA last season is he couldn't hit shit. He was a 47% true shooting last year. He's at 53 this year, but over the last 2 months, 56% true shooting, above league average, usage at 22%. He's averaging 4.5 assists in that time, 0.6 steals and 0.7 blocks, I guess keeping some of his value down, but averaging 16-5-4.5 with a 3 on decent enough percentages is really rocketing his numbers up. And over the last month, he's a top 50 player, averaging 18-5.5-5.5. With a block, with 0.7 steals and over a 3 and 51% shooting, really starting to realize his potential. And I was quite down on Ingram. I thought he was horrible last season, and he started off this season not good at all, but he is flying at the moment. And next season's going to be real interesting. And if he finished next season as a top 35 guy, wouldn't be stunned. We're seeing all of the parts come together now. He could easily be a 1-1 average guy. He's never going to be a 2-1-1, like a 2-triple sort of guy, but he can be a 1-1-1 sort of a player with 5 assists, with 6 rebounds, with 20 points. And that's a super valuable player. So really good stuff from Brandon Ingram. Brookie Lopez, 11-3-2 with 22 minutes. He sort of settled back into that low 20s role now with Ivica Zubats getting more playing time, 17 minutes for Zubats. Lopez, it's more of a 14-team scenario. The future MVP had 10-9 in 28 minutes. Much like Jason Tatum, I didn't give a shit what someone did in November or December and really boosted my team up. This has been a considerable run of him struggling. The minutes are down, and if you need to drop, I think you have to consider that. Joshie, the Hitman Hart, 27 minutes for Hitman, 14-2 with 3 triples. You've heard me say plenty of times, I don't think he's a 12-team league guy. And another bloke who might not be a 12-team league guy for much longer is Isaiah Thomas. 13-2-5 in 27 minutes for Thomas. I would still hold him. I would comfortably hold him over Hart. But I don't think he's playing 30 minutes for this team. It could, but I doubt it. KCP, 10-14 in 33 minutes, a nice little run from him, while Randall, just really good stuff from Julius this season in his fourth year, 10-14 with 2 triples, putting up some good numbers. The efficiency was great. So let's say 10-14, 19-10 he had, on 62%. So the efficiency really improved for him this season. Onto the Hawks. The artist formerly known as Taurean Prince. This is what we hoped we could see more often. 24-3-3, 4 triples and 3 steals, and played 32 minutes. He's not going to see his minutes reduced in a tanking effort. He's part of that young core. If he's on my waiver wire, I'd absolutely consider it and seeing what he can offer. Well, Dennis Schroeder, the minutes are down for Schroeder. Only 27 here, 20 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists and 2 steals. Still good numbers, but I'm just a little bit concerned about those minutes. If you were concerned about the Undertaker's minutes, Dwayne Dedman in that last game, he played 25, he started again. It wasn't a great night, but 7-7 in 25 minutes is better than not seeing the court the entire second half, which is what happened in the previous game. Well, the Baptist, John Collins, he struggled with fouls, only had 24 minutes playing time, 6-9 with a steal and a block. Yeah, he shoots more efficiently than that. We're talking 10-9 with a steal and a block, and it's useful. Should be owned. Isaiah Taylor, man, where's this guy coming from? I can't believe the Rockets cut him. 16 points in 21 minutes. With Malcolm Delaney back, and DeAndre Bembry, when they come back, it might impact what Taylor can do. But at the moment, he's got some sneaky, deep league type of value. Let's go on to the next one. It's the Orlando Magic and the Oklahoma City Thunder. TJ Augustin, man, when you think you're out, he just pulls you back in. 33 minutes, 10 points, 4 rebounds, 9 assists and 3 steals. And this is something that I did mention quite a bit. And it's part of the issues that Alfred Payton suffered in Orlando is that Frank Vogel has no point guard patience. He'll play one guy 33 minutes and he'll play him 22 the next night, then 26. And he's all over the place. And he did it with Payton. And I think it really impacted Payton's or the Magic's ability to get value back in a trade or just for him to actually improve his game. And we're seeing that now with Augustin. Not that they need to develop DJ, but he's going to be all over the place with his minutes. If you need a point guard, he's still going to have some value. Shelvin Mack only played the 17 here. Mario Hezonja, this is why I was worried. Only 15 minutes for Itzemi. He had 4 points with 3 rebounds and 2 steals. I think he'll play more than this on most nights, but this is the real concern. As Gordon, 18 and 7, 2 steals and 3 blocks. Still can't shoot. 1 of 7 from 3, 7 of 20 from the field, but nice numbers otherwise. Well, Nick Vucevic, 15 and 7 with 3 triples, a steal, and 2 blocks. Really good numbers from Vuce. Onto the Thunder, Russell Westbrook had a double-double without points, 12 rebounds and 11 assists, only 8 points on 12 shots. Only got to the line twice, a very weird Westbrook game. Joshy Huster started, but it was Alex Abrines who played more off the bench, 12 points with 2 triples and a big block. When you're getting blocks from Abrines, you count yourself lucky. While Mello was atrocious, 9 points in 32 minutes. Steve-O Adams was good, Paulie George was good, both those guys grabbed 8 rebounds. While Fat-Face Ray Felton chimed in with a sneaky 13 points in 13 minutes. Not much to really talk about, though, with the Thunder, though. Their roles are fairly secure. And if you're in a 10-team league, in an 8-team league, I don't think you need to hold Mello. In a 10-team, it's debatable. In an 8, I reckon there's going to be better guys out there than Mello. Don't get blinded by the name value. The Phoenix Suns and the New Orleans Pelicans. Devin Booker, 41 minutes, playing backup point guard, playing starting shooting guard, 40, 10, and 7, 3 triples, 50% shooting. That is a ludicrous, ludicrous game from Booker. TJ Warren also looking strong again, 42 minutes, 23 and 6 with 2 steals and 2 blocks. They had to go extraordinarily small in this game because both Dragan Bender and Marquise Chris fouled out with about 9 minutes to go, and then there was 4 minutes to go and Alex Len fouled out, so they had no big men whatsoever. So we had TJ Warren playing at center, hence the big minutes. Lord Alfred Payton had 16, 7 and 5, while Joshy Jackson, 20 points, took a lot of shots, 15 from the field, 11 free throw attempts and 12 rebounds. More of a streamer than a 12-team league guy, but he's shown some flashes of fantasy value. I just don't love what I see from him on the court at this point. Len was disgusting. 1, 2, and 2 in his 21 minutes, obviously fouled out. Had a usage of 5%, so that's awesome. Tyson Chandler looks like he's going to miss a little bit more time, so Len is fine, but there's going to be some stinkers in there for him. Well, Marquise Chris, just, is he ever going to be anything? He's still young, so I'm still giving him benefit of the doubt. If he gets to his fourth year, which is 2 years away, and he's still doing this shit, then you can write him off. Dragan Bender, 9, 6, and 7. The 7 assists are very, very sexy from Dragan, but he is just that 16-team league sort of a player at this point in his career. For the Pelicans, I talked about tone already. Jrue Holiday had 22 and 7 with 2 steals. While Rajon Rondo, the minutes are up again, 36 minutes, only 6 points, but had 12 assists and 5 rebounds. I think he's got to be owned. It's simple as that at this point. Well, Emeka Okafor has been signed for the rest of the season. 14 and 4 for Okafor in 19 minutes, and Mirotić struggled in this one. Still had 10 and 8, 2 triples. A steal and the block, so filled up the box score, but the minutes weren't ideal because, of course, you've got to give 7 minutes to DeAndre Liggins and 5 minutes for Walt Lemon, but that's more of a back-to-backs type scenario than them being permanent members of the rotation or anything along those lines, or hope so anyway. Indiana and Dallas, Victor Oladipo, only 23 minutes, got himself into significant foul trouble, still had 21, 5, and 4, but it could have been so much better. While Miles Turner loves playing against Dallas, 24 and 11, 2 threes, 1 steal, 3 blocks, big numbers. Bojan Bogdanović, also good. Great streamer, not a must own. 19 and 8. But with him now, with Glennie Robinson III, the little dog, back, we're seeing Bojan push up to the 4 more. That's going to boost his rebounds. It might boost his field goal percentage, but what it's also going to do is cut into Domantas Sabonis' playing time. Sabonis only played 16 minutes here, had 5, 1, and 1, and we might see him playing alongside Miles Turner a little bit less now. Thad was poor, 6 and 14 in 36 minutes. Lance Stevenson struggled. Well, Joe Young started the second half over Corey Joseph, but Joseph still played 37 minutes and racked up a massive 10, 5, and 2. And I say massive entirely sarcastically. He is fine, just a short-term stream, but he is just far from a must-own guy. onto the Mavericks. They made a change to their starting lineup. Dwight Powell started over JJ Barea, but it doesn't seem to matter for these guys whether they're starting or coming off the bench. Barea had 19-2-9 in 26 bench minutes. He should be owned in all leagues. Powell had 10-14 playing 33 as a starter. He will likely play three or four less if he comes off the bench. Barea will play three or four more, but they'll both be worthwhile regardless of their role. Dougie McDirt, 15-4 in 16 minutes. Did shit all as usual in the other areas. Someone tweeted at me today if I could guess what Doug McDermott's career high in steals is, and I guessed one, and I was correct. One. That is his career high in steals in a game. The pencil at 21-3 with very little else, as he is wont to do. Well, Dirk struggled. He'd been playing quite well. Nowitzki only 7-7 in 25 minutes there. The Houston Rockets and the Utah Jazz. I said yesterday that if James Harden is MVP, and someone tweeted back at me and said, surely you have to be talking about fantasy only. Like, is that such an outlandish statement that I think that James Harden is the runaway leader for MVP? He did have a LeBron James profile pic and Cleveland Court banner on his Twitter profile, so I'm going to guess there's just a margin of bias there, just a touch. Didn't ask him who his pick was, but I reckon I know the answer. LeBron James. Anyway, the Rockets team missing three rotation players on a back-to-back on the road in Utah, an absolute death trap of a game. They just grinded the Jazz into the dirt. 96-85, did it with defense. Their pace is way down at the moment. The Rockets, I believe David Locke tweeted out today that over the last 10 or 12 games, they're the last in pace, which is astonishing. But they are just winning in any way possible, and they are frighteningly good. 26-11-5 for Jimmy. Chrissy Paul had 15-6-7 with three steals. There was no Ryan Anderson. There was no Clint Capella. There was no Eric Gordon. So we had Tariq Black start and play 18 minutes and have 8-4. And Nene had 9-5 in his 20 minutes. Clearly, those guys aren't fantasy useful, as Black will be out of the rotation in the next game. Gerald Green made a reappearance, 3 points in 16 minutes. He is a clear drop in any league. While Trevor Ariza struggled, 9 points on just 13 shots. In an 18 league, I don't think he's a must-own. 10s and 12s, especially 12s, I'll still be holding him. Joe Johnson had 7 in 30 minutes. He's getting some minutes in Houston and doing nothing with them. While Luke Marmute had 12 fourth quarter points to end with 17 in 29 minutes. Hit all 7 of his shots, had a steal and a block, and of course we know that that's unsustainable. Ravishing Rick Rubio, 27 minutes, 14-3-5. It's always good to see someone coming back from an injury put up similar numbers to what they did before, so that's a good sign. Gobert had 17-6, while the Don, Donovan Mitchell, had 16-2-4 with 3 steals. Nice numbers from those guys. Favors struggled, Ingles struggled, while Jay Crowder, just horrendous percentage-wise, but had 12-6-5, which are nice counting stats. He's fine to own, but not a guy that I'd be clinging on to for dear life. The last game of the night, the Minnesota Timberwolves, they got an 18-point victory over the Sacramento Kings. So Tom Thibodeau made sure he ground his players into dust once more, played them until there was under 2 minutes left. And people can tell me, oh, their pace is slow. Players used to play big minutes back in the day and not get hurt. And that is true. The Timberwolves are the 23rd team in pace. So they're in the bottom third of teams in terms of pace, and you know, they're playing longer minutes, but less possessions, less bounding about, all that sort of stuff. Yes, players used to play long minutes back in the day. Athleticism is a little bit different now. But there is absolutely zero defense for doing this. You can say, well, the more you are out on a court, the more opportunities you have to jump, to get your legs tangled up, to roll an ankle, to step on someone. You cannot debate that. If you're on the court for 40 minutes, if you're on the court for 20 minutes, there are double the amount of opportunities for that to happen to you. No one can debate that. If you are doing this time and time again, and there's limited rest periods, you're consistently stressing your joints and muscles, it can lead to problems building up. But the number one thing is, the more you're on the court, the more chance you have of getting hurt. If you're sitting on the bench with a tracksuit top on, you're not going to get hurt. And I've got no problem playing these guys 40 minutes in games that it counts. But when you're 20 points up over one of the worst teams in the NBA with three, four minutes left, they don't need to play. There is absolutely not one single positive reason that you can tell me that would say they need to play. They need to get their reps in as a unit? Bullshit. They've played the most minutes of any five-man unit in the entire NBA. they need to get run because they're conditioning. Bullshit. There is not one single reason why they should be on the court. The only things that you can say is that there is more of a chance of them getting hurt. So when you've got this opportunity, you can say, oh, maybe they won't get hurt. Injuries are luck. Other players have done it. But if you've got the ability to say, well, this thing here gives me no positives and this option here could save me a negative, surely you do it. It's as common sense as anything. The other part of it, you give zero confidence to your bench players so that if things go wrong or if someone goes down or multiple players go down, your bench players, they don't play. They can't build confidence with the starting guys and they have to, you know, get in there. Guys like, you know, Marcus Georges Hunt, like they're not even playing these guys. Shabazz Muhammad, like get them some minutes, get them some opportunities, let them mix in with these other players. You're giving no confidence to them on the court. And you're also pissing them off. And when players like Jimmy Butler are out there saying, man, we need, and Taj Gibson, I think, well, maybe it was Taj that said it, we need, the bench needs more units, more minutes, more reps. Like, these guys get pissed off. Man, what am I doing here? Why do I want to come here and play for Tibbs and sit on my ass every single friggin' game? It is foolish. And why nobody can say to Tibbs, pull your head in and get these blokes off the court and do something different. Because, and the other thing is, there's no extra gear for this team. Every other team takes their starters from 33 minutes to 38 minutes. Tibbs goes from what? He goes from 39 to 42, maybe? Like, where's the extra gear that his teams can go? There is literally zero excuse. And I'm not saying it caused the Jimmy Butler injury, but I know what it didn't do. It didn't prevent an injury. Carl Anthony Towns was great, 26 and 17 with 4 assists, 2 steals and 2 blocks, 9 of 10 from the field, hit all 8 of his free throws. The usage could still do with a little bit of work, 4th highest usage on the team behind Wiggins, Teague and Crawford, but got to the line a lot of times. Bielitsa was good, 12 and 7, the 4 steals really boosted his fantasy value. He is not a noted steals getter, so don't be counting on that. Jeffy Teague looks like he could be the biggest beneficiary of the Butler injury.
My name is Jeff.
24 and 7. 3 steals, didn't shoot particularly well, but the usage is going up for Teague, 30% usage highest on the team. Wiggins had 22 points, that's sexy, 53%, that's sexy. 1 rebound? What? 2 assists, a steal and a block, and his inability to get any sort of rebounding happening is always going to keep him away from the upper echelons of fantasy. Taj Gibson had 15 and 5, Jeng had 10 and 6, and not much else to report. A shit game from Crawford. He is not a 12-team league guy, in my opinion. On to the Kings. They are back to resting veterans. Just absolutely brilliant transparency from this team, who said they were going to do this approximately 6 weeks ago, did it for about 2 weeks, and then stopped, and now we're back into it. No Vince Carter, no Garrett Temple, no Zach Randolph. Once again, we have no idea what's going to happen on what single day, how the rotations are going to work, who's going to be in and out, but owning guys like Randolph in 12-team leagues is going to be a no-go, and Temple, Carter, and Kufos are your deep league guys, and they can be moved on from. But add guys like Budrick Hield, who had 16 and 5. Add Skel Labissiere, who had 20 and 4 in 31 minutes. Make sure Willie Cauley-Stein and De'Aaron Fox are owned, who had 17 and 13 points respectively, and some nice shooting nights. Frank Mason in your deeper leagues, go and look at him. He had 9 and 18. Bogdan had 11, 3 and 6. He's a must-own player. Shit, even Bruno Caboclo played 19 minutes here. It eclipsed his entire playing time for the Raptors this year. Didn't do anything, but in a 20-team format, a 30-team format, maybe we can look at Bruno. Maybe we can get a look at him down the stretch here. But that is apparently back for the Kings, resting veterans each game. They've only got 4 of them now, so rested 3 in this one. So I've got no idea what the pattern's going to be, but these guys are going to be sitting out games. We're going to get lots of Skel, lots of Budrick, lots of Foxy, lots of Will, lots of Jackson, lots of Bogdanovich, and lots of Mason. They are going to be getting lots of minutes for the Sacramento Kings. All right, let's head on now and look at the player spotlight for today. And today's player spotlight, as I mentioned earlier, it is Trey Burke of the New York Knicks. Burke is a player, obviously, that was drafted by the Utah Jazz with pick 9 in 2013. I don't believe it was their pick. I think it might have been the Timberwolves pick, part of the Shabazz Muhammad trade. Someone can correct me if I'm wrong there. But anyway, he struggled in his time in Utah. He was ranked 141st in his rookie season. Yeah, not too bad. Still shot 38%, but the numbers consistently went down. 168th the next season, 233 the next season. And last year as a backup in Washington, he was putrid. Patriot, 379th in 12 minutes per game, averaging 5 points and only under 1.8 assists. But in New York, at least last three games, he has looked rejuvenated. But a word of warning for a guy like Trey Burke, who has been an under-league average true shooting guy every year of his career. 47, 46, 51, 53 across his first four NBA seasons. His time in New York, he is shooting 60% true shooting so far this year. And the last three games where he's had big minutes, he has played 27 minutes per game, averaged 23 points, and averaged 6 assists per game. So his per 36 assist rate is sitting over 2 above what he'd done previous in his career. So that's really well up. His 2-point percentage is at an astronomically high rate. And Nate Duncan and Danny LaRue did a good breakdown on Trey Burke and his unsustainable 2-point shooting, something I've been talking about as well in their latest 15 in 60, which was released a couple of days ago. So you can go and listen to that for another viewpoint on what Trey Burke's doing. I think his minutes are going to be fine. You know, mid-20s, 25 to 26 minutes. Yeah, that's all fine. But he won't continue to have, which over these last three games, he has a 31% usage with a 60% true shooting and 54% from the field. He won't be able to continue that 2-point shooting on that level of usage, so he won't average 23 points per game. No problem with adding him. I just think this is as blippy as it gets in terms of high efficiency shooting from Burke. He might be a 46% guy for the rest of the year. And that drops him down from, instead of averaging 23 points per game, it drops him down to averaging 13 or 14. He is averaging in these three games almost 19 field goal attempts per game. That is an extraordinarily high level for a guy that's as not good as what Trey Burke is. So we look at what's happening with him at the moment. The numbers look pretty sexy on the surface, but when you dig down into them, that sort of shooting efficiency on that level high usage, it's just stuff that a player like him can't do. And maybe he's changed his stripes. I really don't think that that's the case. But if we look at what he did in the G League in his time for Westchester, he averaged 27 points per game. He shot 49% from the field, including 42% from three, but only 5.3 assists per game. So what we have to look here is he's averaging more assists in fewer minutes in the NBA, shooting a higher field goal percentage in the NBA as well. These things are bound to come down, and doing it while sporting a higher usage in the NBA than what he had in the G League. All those things don't really mesh together to make you think, yeah, Trey Burke's going to be able to continue this sort of playing time. He's still atrocious defensively, one of the terrible defensive box score plus minus stuff. And for all his success this year, he's still a negative. The team is still better than him, better with him on the bench. Just 0.4 points, so not a big difference, but still a negative. And you'd think with as well as he's been so-called playing, that the numbers would look a little bit better for him. But at this point, they're clearly not at that clearly not at that area just yet. But he is worth a look. I'll grant you that. But just I would absolutely urge significant levels of caution about expecting this level of play from a guy like Trey Burke to continue. He is 25 years of age, so he still is not past his prime. He's sort of right where he needs to be, but this is a very, very short-term run of some decent numbers that I don't believe he's going to be able to keep up this level of 2-point shooting in particular, and combined with this high of a usage. Maybe he can keep a 26, 27% usage. Maybe that's something he can do. But doing it on 60% true shooting feels like it's going to be tough. And as I said earlier, I would rather have a guy like Emmanuel Mudiay, who's likely to get more minutes most of the time, has the extra benefit, I think, of getting more steals and assists than what Burke does. I think that that's more of a more sustainable value than what we're seeing out of Burkey just at this point. All right, due to popular demand of bringing back the perfect DFS lineups, on FanDuel, Manny Mudiay had 41.9 and Chrissy Dunn had 40.6, Klay Thompson 40.3 and Devin Booker 62.5. Some pretty obvious picks. I think Mudiay was a strong one. Dunn was in a good spot there against the Nets as well. Booker, Ingram at 51. Nice one. John Simmons at 40. Serge Ibaka and Pascal Siakam as the power forwards. Couldn't have predicted that. 38.8 for Serge and 29 for Pascal. And Tone Davis, of course, at center. 96.1 for a total of 440.2. And that cost $60,000. On DraftKings, Moutier had 40.5, Devin Booker had 66.5, The Hammer had 36.25, and Jermichael Green had 36.75, Jarrett Allen 37.75, Brandon Ingram 50.5, Jono Simmons had 36.75, and Tone Davis, of course, he had 93 points. That's a total of 398 points, and that cost $50,000. All right, let's move on now and try and work out how you could potentially get yourself the perfect lineup on Tuesday. It's a smaller slate, only six games, so there might be some value to be had there over on these sites. Let's start with FanDuel. It's the Brooklyn Nets heading to Cleveland. The Cleveland Cavs are favored by 12. That sounded so awkward. Cleveland Cavs headed by, they're favored by 12 here. The total is 220.5 points. Jahlil Okafor is questionable. He's questionable to ever set foot on NBA court again, to be honest. He's not part of the rotation, so you should not care. At point guard, Georgie Hill's at 4,600. Point guards against the Nets, it's always a good bet, but he has been up and down in his playing time. If I was going to use Hill, it's just as a tournament guy. I don't have any faith in cash games. Same with Jordy Clarkson, even though he's listed as a shooting guard. Spencer Dinwiddie at 7,200. Point guards against the Cavs has always been a good way to go. Dinwiddie has done okay against them in the past. I think he's not a bad spot here. Probably more tournament than cash, though. LeVert, Rocket Rodney Hood, J.R. Smith, Jordy Clarkson, Kyle Korver. I don't like any of those guys as really cash options. I don't really even like any of them as tournament plays apart from the plumber, J.R. Smith, who's down to 4,200 after a nice two-point outing in his last game. While D'Angelo Russell at 72, I'd be okay with using him as a GPP option as well. At small forward, Damari Carroll's at 57, a monster from him today. 34 points, averaging over 30 over the last five, but I'm a little cautious of the minutes. Played only 27 today. Rondé is back and likely to have his minutes bumped up, according to Kenny Atkinson. So 5,700 might look appealing. The matchup might look good on the surface. I just fear this is a bit of a fade area for Damari. LeBron's at 11.5. He's always okay to have a look at. The Blue Swimmer, Dante Cunningham, Joe Harris, Chetty Osman. Yeah, maybe Alan Crabb at 5,300. He's been exceeding that value fairly comfortably most nights. I could see using him, but I still don't have really cash confidence. Larry Nance at 58. Let's put that into the centers against the Nets type of pile. So I do like that. The minutes are the worry, but he played only 15 in the last game and had 27 points, which would have smashed through that value. So I think that he has got enough upside to use as a tournament guy. Hollis Jefferson at 6'3". I think we're fading, as with Jeff Green. While Tristan Thompson, not a noted fantasy guy, but centers, the Nets. Unless your name's Chris Felizio, you've got an opportunity to put up numbers. 4,800 for Tomo here. Great type of matchup, but still more tournament just because of that price elevation that's come through on FanDuel of a $700 price rise. On DraftKings, I like Spencer Dinwiddie there again, 7,000. Larry Nance at 52 and Tristan Thompson at 45 have got that Nets big man boost, so they've got some upside. Very similar situations for the others. I do like D'Angelo at 6,900. I like LeBron at 11,700 there as well. Let's move on to the next game now. We're going to take a look at the Chicago Bulls and the Charlotte Hornets. The Bulls, of course, on a back-to-back also. The Hornets favored by 10.5, and the total is 216 points. Paul Zipser is questionable. If Zipser is out, that likely gives some more minutes to Chris Felizio. We've seen that in the last two games, but, of course, we are very, very unexcited by that. Point guards against the Bulls is normally a good way to go as well, and there's a pretty good point guard here. Kemba Walker is at $9,000, but I think he's got the ability to exceed that. I like his tournament upside. I think he's fairly good for cash also. While Chrissy Dunn at $6,500, you'd think going against Kemba's a pretty good matchup, but the Hornets have actually been relatively restrictive against opposition point guards so far over recent times, and Zach LaVine coming back might put a bit of a cramp onto Dunn, but I still think that he is worth looking at. At shooting guard, Nick Batum at 7,000. All about Batum here. He's in a rich vein of form. No one's really going to be able to slow him down. He's going to be able to do multiple things. The Bulls are careless with the ball as well. He can get himself some steals, so I like that. While LaVine coming back at 7,600. Yeah, look, I don't mind it for LaVine. Batum guarding him can be a problem. I'd more likely fade LaVine than play him. At small forward, Jez Lamb is at 4,800. Normally, I wouldn't be too interested, but this could be a blowout against a tanking Bulls team with shitness on the wing there. If they limit guys like Batum or like Kid Gilchrist, Lamb could play 28 minutes and get himself 30 points. So I think he's an interesting tournament guy. Kid Gilchrist, I want nothing to do with. And the hammer, Denzel Valentine at 4,000. Strong game today, but he's likely to drop his minutes back down with Levine back in action, even though Justin Holiday will be out of the rotation. David Nwaba is at 4,800. I very much don't like that. Power forward Marvin Williams, 41, no for me. Lauri Markkanen at 61, I'm in on that. He played well against them the last couple of times, averaging 36 against the Hornets so far in his rookie season. Got back on track today. I think this is an interesting spot to use him. While Frank the Tank's playing pretty well at the moment, Kaminsky. 4,400 for Frank, averaging 28 over the last three. So there is some upside there. Still not ready to trust that in cash. And I'll say the same for Punch Bob, who's at 7,100 and has been disappointing the last two games. But he's got 50-point upside, so that does put him into the tournament mix. At center, Cody Zeller at 37. If this comes down to a blowout, Zeller could have 25 points, so there is something there for him. Not going to use that in cash. While Dwight at 8,500. I think the blowout risk just limits him at that elevated salary. And Chris Felizio, yeah, nah. Let's go on to DraftKings. Punch Bob's at 6'5". That's a good tournament play over there. There's a bunch of guys I like more for cash. I do like Dwight for cash on DraftKings. Kemba at 86 is good. I love Batum at 63 and Markkanen at 57. One of the better plays on the board. I think Lowry at that price. Jeremy Lamb and Chris Dunn. Chris Dunn, I'm more sour on DraftKings just because of his price at 6,900. It might be pushing it just a little bit there for Chrissy. While Lamb has that same tournament style upside that I just talked about. Let's go across to the next game. It's the Philadelphia 76ers and the Miami Heat. The Sixers are favored by 1.5, coming off a bad loss to the Wizards, and the total is 205.5 points. Cal Olynyk has been upgraded to questionable. That puts a little bit of a cramp on the value of Jim Johnson, of Hassan Whiteside, maybe Bam Adebayo and Justice Winslow. The only one you'd really be considering in DFS is going to be Whiteside. He's had a 19-minute game against the Sixers this year and a 29-minute game. So, you know, wide range of expectations or outcomes for what he can do. So he is an interesting one, especially if Olynyk plays. That takes a little bit of the value away. At point guard, Timothy John McConnell's at 3,600. It's a bad matchup. The minutes just aren't high enough. Or Tyler Johnson at 47. They're playing really well, Tyler, averaging 27 over his last five. I don't hate using him in cash despite the negative matchup here. Marco Bellinelli at 36. Dwayne Wade at 42. Yeah, just a couple of shooting guards I think we can leave. Well, JJ Redick at 51 has seen a couple of minutes lopped off the top since Bellinelli has arrived. Unlikely Ersan Ilyasova plays in this game, by the way. Redick at 5,100, I think I'd leave that alone. The Duke at 3,900, always an interesting tournament guy who can get hot, dropped 26 in the last game. At small forward, Joshy Richardson's at 6,000. We're a little bit concerned about a couple of games for him, but still, he's right at the ship. He's averaging 32 over the last three, 28 over the last five. I feel pretty comfortable that the minutes are going to be there. And even if it's an off shooting night, he can do things in multiple categories, which always makes him an interesting DFS guy and a relatively solid one. Bob Cove is down to 5,000 because he just cannot sniff it at the moment. I don't hate that in DFS. There won't be many people on Covington and that price is appealing, but he is just doing nothing at the moment. At power forward, Šarić is at 6,500. I'll fade that. I think it's a bit high. Well, Benny Simmons at 9,000, no problem. He's averaging 49.5 against the Heat. Absolutely fine with him. He is just cranking out the numbers, averaging 48 over his last five. No problems at all. Jim Johnson at 5,000. Adebayo at 5,000. Amir and Trevor Booker at minimum salary. You want nothing to do with them, I don't think. Hassan's at 7,400. I'll lean a little bit towards him playing bigger minutes against Embiid. And I think there is 40 point upside here, which makes him an interesting play. And I have a degree of confidence in his floor. I've got a big degree of confidence in Joel Embiid's floor. He's at 10-2. I feel like getting 50 is almost a walk in the park for Embiid these days, so that makes him a very sexy DFS type of a player. Let's check this out on DraftKings. I like Joshy Richardson at 52, an inordinate amount. That is a great, great number. While Embiid at 9-4 is also in a strong spot, and Whiteside at 7-2, I'd probably go more tournaments there. Benny Simmons at 87, also pretty big on that. While Covington's down to 49, so the same sort of stuff applies. An interesting tournament player, and also not too big on the iron shoulder, Goran Dragic, in that game, which I didn't mention on FanDuel. Wizards and Bucks. The Bucks are favored by 3. The total is 211 points here in this one. Point guards, Eric Bledsoe, 7,900, just constantly cranking out the 40s. I really like this here for Bledsoe. While Tomas Satoransky's at 6,900. He's constantly cranking out the 30s, but at 6,900, I want him to constantly crank out the 35. So probably, especially against a negative matchup like Bledsoe, I'd probably end up fading Satoransky here. At shooting guard, Brad Beal's at 8,500. I've got no qualms about using Beal. He is just giving you big numbers almost every single game with a 42-point average over his last five. Absolutely fine in cash and tournaments. Tone Snell is the opposite of fine. He is bad. Sterling Brown at minimum salary. Jody Meeks and Jason Terry fade them. Kelly Oubre's at 5,000. I cannot get behind him in cash, but I do love the tournament upside. While Yanni at 11,000, Adetokunbo is strong in both forms of the game, as is Otto Porter at 7,200. I'm feeling good about Porter at the moment. He's really stepping up. The usage has gone up, which is always a big thing for Porter, and looking good at the moment. At power forward, the Muppet, John Henson, 5,500. Do they go back to the three-center rotation? Will that impact Henson? I don't know, but I do think there is 30-point upside here, so I like him for tournaments. While Jabari Parker dropped 31 in the last game, his best performance since returning from his second ACL. He's at 4,500. I'd only be looking at a tournament play and not interested in Markeith. At center, it's Marcin Gortat, it's Jan Mahimi, it's Thon McCur, it's Tyler Zeller, and you can go in a different direction. On DraftKings, I like a lot here. This is a real stackable game. Oubre for tournaments, but a bunch of guys I like for cash. The Muppet at 47, Satoransky at 58. That's what I'm talking about. 68 for Otto Porter, love it. Chrissy Middleton at 67, big on that. Even Eric Bledsoe at 73 is good. Probably the only one that I like on FanDuel that I'd fade on DraftKings is Beal at 89. That's probably just pushing it a bit too high, whereas Adetokunbo at 10.7 is one of the best high-priced guys on the entire board on DraftKings. The next game up, we've got the Sacramento Kings and the Portland Trailblazers. Who sits out this one? What mystery will it be? I would guess that Kostas Koufos doesn't play. Does Zach Randolph return? Does Vince Carter play? We don't know any of that at this point. I would, again, guess that Koufos is out at this stage. At point guard, Shabazz Napier at 4,000. Big blowout potential, so Shabazz could drop a 25er here. Yeah, I'm not going to be using him in every lineup, but there is an ability if you're just looking for a cheap upside flyer tournament guy. Maybe just the blowout nature could get him in more. I love Lillard at 10,000 here. I don't care if it's a blowout. He can drop 50 in 27 minutes pretty comfortably here. Well, De'Aaron Fox is at 5,700. He's been good. He just isn't a great DFS player at this point. So against a matchup which has been a negative all season, and that's point guards against the Blazers, I think that we can leave Fox alone here. At shooting guard, I love CJ McCollum at 7,700. A really good matchup for CJ. This has got 40 upside here for him. Really like that. While Budrick's at 55, and I think that is a strong, strong cash play as well as a tournament option. While Bogdan at 5,400, being a little bit under where he needs to be, but I have no problems with using him in this one also. At small forward, Mo Harkless at 43. He's going to start. He's going to play minutes. Is he going to do anything with it? The answer to that is likely no. Justin Jackson, Evan Turner, Bruno Caboclo, no chance. Power forward, let's go. Skel Abissier, 5,400. All about Skel here. Eddie Davis at 38, no, but let's get back on Skel. Like that for cash quite a bit. El-Farouq Aminu, the Chief.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
Well, he was shit in the last game, so maybe this is the good one. He had just 12 points in his last outing in 35 minutes. You would never want to use him in cash, though, quite clearly. At center, Yusuf Nurkic at 7,300, playing really well. A 38-point average over his last three, a sensational matchup. No problems with using Nurkic here. While Will Cauley-Stein at 6,900, I'd spring for the extra 400 and use Nurkic in pretty much all situations. On DraftKings, a few guys I like for both cash and tournaments. Labissiere at 46 is a no-brainer. Cauley-Stein at 62 is pretty good. Nurkic at 68, strong. McCollum at 75 and Lillard at 97, good value there. Throw in Budrick Hield at 5,300, and there's a bunch of guys I think you can stack in this game on both FanDuel and on DraftKings. Let's go on to the last game of the night. It is the LA Clippers, the Denver Nuggets. The Nuggets are favored by 4. The total is 232.5. Avery Bradley is out, and Paul Millsap has been upgraded to questionable. The Rooster is also questionable for the Clippers. That is Danilo Gallinari, for those of you who are uninitiated into his nickname. If Millsap plays, it takes a big chunk out of Wilson Chandler's value, takes a little bit off Trey Lyles and Mason Plumlee as well. But Millsap coming back, I don't think he's going to be out there playing 32 minutes a night. But on FanDuel, he's priced at minimum salary. So I think you absolutely have to have him in tournament lineups. Even if we don't get word if he's playing, you have to throw a second lineup in there at least and have him in there at that salary. It gives you so much more flexibility that even if he plays 20 minutes, he smashes through that without any problems whatsoever. We don't know whether he will do that. But this is a guy that's been fine to go. It's not a conditioning issue. It was a hand wrist problem. So the minutes should be okay for him. They won't be full 32 minutes, but they're going to be mid to high 20s, I would guess. And at minimum salary, it's really tough to go past that. Back to the point guards. The Blue Arrows at 7,000. Jamal Murray, great matchup for him here. Been a little bit under the last couple. I still think that there is a use for him here. While Austin Rivers at 56, you might scoff at that. I think that's fine for cash. Really strong floor for Austin Rivers. Milos, no. Shooting guard, Gaz Harris.
Nice, Gary!
He was poor in that last game, but still put up 29 points, and that's a sign of a good player. I like his matchup here. I like it a lot. In fact, 6,700, totally fine to get back on the Gaz train, while Lou Williams at 7,300, I also feel pretty strongly about. Fartin Will Barton at 7,600. He did drop 50 in the last game, but I find it hard to rely upon him for cash. But in saying that, he's averaging 39 over his last five. He's been relatively consistent. The matchup favors him. I just feel there are other better value options out there for him. While Ty Wallace at 4,500 had 33 in the last game, he's likely going to start again. No problems whatsoever considering him as a GPP guy. At small forward, the Rooster, don't know if he's going to play, so that's a fade. Baby Neck, Wilson Chandler, Wes Johnson, and Sam Decker aren't doing it. I've already talked about Millsap as a power forward. Toby Harris at 7,500, just putting up big numbers consistently. No concern with using Harris here, really. While Mason Plumlee at 43, significant downside risk. While the table, Montrezl Harrell, 4,500. The numbers for him have been solid, averaging 25 over the last three in only 18 minutes. I feel like that level of production is probably a little bit tough to rely upon, so I don't really see the upside there. While at center, Nikola Jokic.
Pretty good. It's pretty, 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 pretty good.
He's at 10,200. He's averaging 57 over his last five. He had a down game in the last one and put up 53. No problems. He's a great, great player who's looking really good. While on the other side, DeAndre Jordan at 8,300. I don't mind that for DeAndre. I think there are better ways to spend that sort of cash, though. On DraftKings, I like the Blue Arrow at 66, Lou Williams at 72, Gaz Harris at 6,000 is strong. Paulie Millsap, nowhere near as strong as FanDuel, but still at 5,200. I do like that, while Austin Rivers at 56 is good. Now, Jokic is less appealing on DraftKings because he's at 10.5, and given that's over a fifth of the salary cap, but he has been so bloody good that using him is definitely not a bad choice that you could make. All right. Let's look at the other sites quickly now. Go through Yahoo for tournaments. Whiteside and Nurkic, Larry Nance Jr., the Muppet John Henson, Kelly Oubre, Jeremy Lamb, Georgie Hill, the Blue Swimmer, Mo Harkless, Frank the Tank, the Plumber, Shabazz Napier, Cody Zeller. For cash and tournaments, it's Ty the List Manager Wallace, the Table Montrezl Harrell, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Tristan Thompson, Budrick Hield, Skel Labissiere, D'Angelo Russell, Jamal Murray, CJ McCollum, DeAndre Jordan, Dwight, Ben Simmons, Kemba Walker, Damian Lillard, Nick Jokic, and Yanni Adetokounmpo. On Moneyball for tournaments, The Process, Hassan Whiteside, Yusuf Nurkic, Paulie Millsap, 3,700 there on Moneyball, cheap. Larry Nance, Skel Labissiere, Tristan Thompson, The Muppet, John Henson, Kelly Oubre, Mo Harkless, Jabari Parker, and Frank the Tank. And for cash, it's the List Manager, Ty Wallace, Budrick Hield, Austin Rivers, Joshy Richardson, Spencer Dinwiddie, Batum, Toby Harris, Gaz Harris, Lou Williams, Jamal Murray, Eric Bledsoe, CJ McCollum, Kemba, Lillard, Jokic, LeBron, and Yanni. And on Draft Stars, four tournaments, we've got Yusuf Nurkic, Lowry, Markin, and Tristan Thompson, Georgie Hill, Jez Lamb, Shabazz Napier. And for cash and tournaments, I like the table over there. Skel, Budrick, Satoransky, Nance, Joshy Richardson, Dinwiddie, Gaz Harris, Nick Batum, Toby Harris, The Blue Arrow, CJ McCollum, Kemba Walker, Nick Jokic, LeBron James, and Yanni Adetokounmpo. Don't forget, if you are listening to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, go and leave a 5-star rating and a review. It's one of the best ways that you can help out this podcast. If you've enjoyed it, if you've got some entertainment or some help or some knowledge, it's a great way of showing some support. You can also find this show on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify and on YouTube, where you can leave a comment, you can give a thumbs up, and you can give a subscription, and you should do all three of those things. Check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter at Locked On NBA Net. And remember, I am hosting the Locked On NBA show, which has now gone to 5 days a week. I host it every Monday, so check out me hosting it, plus all the other hosts across the week. Great non-fantasy related, quick hitting 30 to 40 minute podcasts every day. Go and check out that. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Caleb Swanigan.